for anybody that gets into Bitcoin, self-storage. Because, well, if we wouldn't have had that in the wall, and they looked for it, trust me, they tore the house apart.
Well, that's the puzzling thing to me, is it would be very easy to put a like temporarily shut down your operation.
Yeah,
say,
yeah,
hey,
yeah,
we need 48 hours to conduct like a thorough investigation.
Yeah.
But instead they disassembled your machines, right? Like they literally ripped everything out from under you.
They took them. They took everything, the money, the everything they could get their hands on. The most we made in one day, and this is hard to believe, was 50 grand. Wow. 50,000 in one day. But we averaged about 12 to 15, I don't remember exactly, 1,000 a day.
So you found out from the news that your attorney who'd been with you on this journey is no longer practicing law.
We're doing the federal case. We had threes.
So they got to him.
So I hear this.
Hey there, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have two of our clients, Mike and Steve Long, who joined to tell a crazy story that they had in setting up a business and some of the corruption in law enforcement, the story they went through taking their court case federal and ultimately getting burned in so many ways. Crazy story. I think it is really important to highlight these sorts of injustices, though, because as we discuss, it happens all the time, and this is just one such situation, but appreciate them joining and bringing this sort of situation to light and then talking a bit about how they found Bitcoin and the importance of its inability to be confiscated and the importance of self-custody. So I really think you'll enjoy the story and my conversation with Mike and Steve. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got the Long brothers here. Gentlemen, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's nice to be here.
Yeah, hey, I'm looking forward to this conversation. You guys have a crazy story, and I told you before we hit record, I want to give you some room to run and to tell the story about your business. I know you've had several, you've done some incredible stuff, and of course, law enforcement, government, you know, has a way of getting in the way of things. Why don't you sort of start at the beginning, the business that you began operating, and what you were doing. And one of the things that when we talked separately that struck me was the diligence you went through to make sure you were doing everything properly as best you could, because I think there was gray area, some uncertainty, but you were, you know, checking all the boxes to make sure that there were no issues, and then it still came back to haunt you.
We even got attorneys to set it up and get the proper paperwork and the, you know, everything. So
then they came to Earth and wanted to sue the
right. Why don't you set us up? Explain the business, the operation, the context, and then kind of flow right into what all happened.
Well, we had like you said, we had several businesses, and over the years, it evolved. Like when, I won't get into it all, but when we were kids, when I was real young, I went to work at painting cars. And so I was being trained. And after being there several years, and I got good at it, and I was actually painting the cars. And my boss, Mr. Bentley, one day he comes up. It was the first car I actually painted by myself, and he was mentoring me, and he was a friend down the road. We were friends with his kids. Anyway, he comes to me and he goes, "Steve, beautiful job, beautiful." I said, "Thank you, Mr. Bentley," and I'm 17. "Thank you, Mr. Bentley," you know, and
I don't think he ever talked like that.
No. Well, I'm probably, anyway. So he goes, "Go into my office. You deserve this. Go in my office, sit in my chair, put your feet up, and then sit there for the rest of the day." I'm like, "Yeah, okay, I'll do that. Yeah.
How much was you making an hour?
Like $2.50 an hour. I don't know what it was. $3 an hour, something like that. So anyway, I go into the office and I sit down and I'm behind the desk and he says, "Oh," he says, "and I got a cup of tea for you there." He says, "Drink the hot tea, you know." I'm like, okay, you know, and I'm sitting there and I reach up and I'm, oh, there's an invoice. Oh, oh. And it's what I just had done. And it was like $3,500 to paint this car back then, you know? And I went, oh, $3,500, what'd I make? I made 30 bucks, you know? It's 3,000. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I was like, eh. So I went out and I said, Mr. Bentley, I'm giving you my, what do you want? I said, I'm going to give you 2 weeks notice, 3 weeks notice. What do you want? I said, because I'm going to go do my own thing. And he goes, oh, come here. And he hugs me. He says, I was wondering how long it would take you to get this thought through your head. He says, anything you need, I'll help you. Come, I'll come out and I'll help you paint. I'll do the whatever you need. He says, I'm so proud of you.
See, and that's been kind of the thing. Everybody, when we went to Texas, when we were looking around because we were driving the RC Canada dry trucks, and we saw these people collecting the phones. I'm jumping way ahead here, but Bill Olin, we got a bunch of contracts for, at the time, nobody had any private pay phones out. And we started putting pay phones out. And Bill Olin said, we had got a bunch of contracts and we contacted them. Steven knows the story better than me on that part. But Bill Olin accepted every one that we had, every one of them.
You want me to kind of go through it?
Yeah, just
jump back a little bit. You want to go curt like that?
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you talk about all these sort of businesses that were related that you had? Because I know you're putting payphones. Where were you putting payphones? You had, you know.
Let me. Yeah. I'm gonna, you know. So you can cut. I mean, I'm not gonna tell you how to do your editing, but you can cut that out.
You guys are better at that than we are.
And I told you about him helping me do the painting. So we'll go back to that. Maybe, I don't know. You can do that if you are. But anyway, so he helped me get my body shop. And my dad was so proud that I was doing this, that he got me a shop. And dad liked old cars. And he went around and he bought all these old cars. He drove log truck. And he'd see, when you rode with our dad, he was driving like this. Oh, there's a, look at that old car over there. And then he'd go buy it. If it was a cool one, like he'd buy, you ever hear a 36 LaSalle Cadillac LaSalle?
It was 1937.
36.
Cadillac LaSalle.
He bought one of those. And if the doors opened the opposite way, suicide doors.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. That way, I guess. So anyway, but he always buy it. He bought, oh man, 30 some cars. He bought a property, and there was an old shell of a gas station on it, and we fixed it up and made it's still out there today. I drive by it almost every day on in my school bus. I'm like, oh, we built that, you know. So anyway,
still there. That's pretty
yeah, it's still there, and it looks good. And so he had all these cars, and I was painting them, and he was selling them, and he'd give me a little bit. Boop, 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 boop. And he was a great guy. But then we saw Amway. And we were making money in Amway. And so then we started doing Amway. And we became successful in Amway. Real short period of time. And Dad was very proud of us. He got an Amway. All his brothers got an Amway. And all my cousins and everything were getting an Amway. And we were traveling to L.A. and then up to Seattle and all over the place.
Idaho.
Yeah, everywhere. We were, and Mike and I were like 23, 24 years old. Just going everywhere. Flying here, flying there. Just doing things we never thought we'd be doing. And so that went on for a while. And then I was up in Seattle. Mike moved to L.A. And then he said he was going to go to Texas. And I'm like, what? Why are you going to Texas? You know, and then because we had a friend that was getting in Texas and he needed help in Texas. So he was going to go to Texas. So
that's how we got there.
So we flew to Texas. We drove down there in the motorhome. And Mike flew to Texas. And And I'm up in Seattle and all around building the Amway business. And if you don't know about Amway, you should look into that, because anybody watching, a lot of people got into Amway and a lot of people made a lot of money. There were a lot of millionaires. We were friends with a lot of millionaires that were in Amway. But the government got a hold of that also and ruined that, because everybody was buying all these products, not from grocery stores, Procter & Gamble.
Call it a chain letter.
Well, they were just messing.
You hear about chain letters?
Yeah. Well, that was a... Anyway, so Mike calls me up and he says, "Steve, come to Texas." I said, "I don't want to come to Texas." I said, "I'm building our Amway business here, and I got a meeting up in Portland, you know." And he says, "Well," he says, "I'm all alone. I don't know what to do." I said, "Go buy a tennis racket and go meet some people at the tennis court." I said, "You'll be fine." And so he did. And that's where I met David, the guy I was telling you about who got the kidney. So anyway, he met them. And then Mike still goes, "Steve, you got to come." He says, "I'll get you a job at RC. I said, "I don't want a job at RC." Driving truck. Anyway, he was like, "Please."
We weren't making much money at Amway at that time.
Yeah, because it was
falling to pieces.
Yeah, because the government did it. So anyway, I went down there, and I get there, and he's sleeping on someone's couch that he met at the church.
Well,
right?
Yeah, I was staying with Keith and Roseanne.
Well, that's a sad story there too.
And they kicked me out because Roseanne hit on me.
And you told Keith?
I told Keith, and then Roseanne says, "You got to go. You got to get out of here." Anyway, then I was on the street.
Yeah.
And then I went to, so I was literally home by myself in a place that I did not know. And so I went to, you know, I was going to church, and I told the pastor, I think I might need a little bit of help here, because I never really asked anybody for help.
Little help
here or here. And so these guys said, "You get to stay with us." And they were really nice people, Hispanics, and I was just like in awe, and you know, I was humbled.
And he didn't tell me he was sleeping on someone's couch. So I show up. This is kind of funny. So I show up, and Mike picks me up at the airport.
Wait.
And I go out there, and this side story here, but this really pretty girl, she was hitting on me. Basically, she
told it first. I told you, he's the one that always gets the girl.
We can cut this out if you want. She was sitting in first class. It was just a big jumbo plane. And she was sitting in first class, and I was way back in the back. And I see this girl up there. I'm like, "Oh, man, and this is a Texas girl, right?" So, you know, and I'm from Clam Falls, Oregon. And so anyway, I'm like, "Wow," you know, and she gets up and she's heads back towards me, and I'm going, you know, like, don't look at her, you know. So she walks by and she goes to the restroom, and I went, "Well, okay, I'm going to go to the restroom," you know. So I'm standing behind her, like, and there was a line to the restroom, and I didn't say anything to her at all. And so she goes to the restroom, and then she goes out, and then I go in the restroom, and then I go out, I go sit down. And pretty soon the stewardess comes up, and she goes, "There's a young lady in first class. She'd like to see if you'd like to join her for some champagne." I went, "Yeah." So I go there. Anyway, we had a nice conversation, and it was, I mean, I couldn't even tell you what it was about, and she gave me her phone number and everything, and she walks with me out to get my luggage and everything, and she's just side by side with me, you know. And so I'm like, "I gotta go meet Mike. He's supposed to meet me out in front," you know. So we go stand on the curb, and we're waiting, and she's just sticking with me, you know. And all of a sudden I hear this, and this old car is coming up the way. It was a, what was that,
I think it was an Oldsmobile.
83 or something like that, or
I don't know. It was a piece of junk.
And the windows were broke and it was rusted and everything. And she's, and I'm going, oh, this is not good. She's not gonna like that, you know. Anyway.
Hey, let's focus on the game business that you guys started. So fast forward to, so you've gone through Amway, you've had all of these different businesses, and sort of income streams. What exactly did you start doing? Because that's when I think the story that we talked about where you really came under scrutiny, came into play. What were the game, what was the game business and what was it that you were setting up? And tell me about like the problem.
Let me tell you how we got to the game business. We were doing the payphones, right? And that was a miracle in itself.
That's at gas stations and convenience stores. So we really started looking and seeing what the gas station convenience store business was all about, and what we could do as entrepreneurs to service gas station convenience stores. And they had payphones, they had ATMs, they had air and water machines, they had vacuums, crane machines inside the stores, some of them. And then A-liners, and I don't know if you know what A-liners are, but they're like a little
slot machine,
video machine that set out tickets, and then they would turn the tickets in for stuff at the stores.
$5.
And so it was really gambling. They put money in, they get the tickets out, and then they can get stuff in the store. So basically, we were going, well, you know, we just checked out what we could do on our own to go to there. And then go ahead, Steve.
In convenience stores. So we didn't go through that, but we got into the payphone business. And Reagan deregulated that when he got in office. And so the payphone industry opened up for individuals like you and me, not just Southwestern Bell or whatever. So anyway, we were in a convenience store one day with a friend of ours, and this friend says, this is what you guys should do. These eight-liners. And do what Mike just told you, that you could play the machines, win
tickets,
money, you know, and then
each ticket was $5.
Trade them in for non-cash novelty items, and people would buy gasoline with it as long as the increments were under $5. Then you could buy as much as you wanted. So anything in the store that was under $5. So he told us that, and I was like, that couldn't be legal. I mean, we're from Oregon. You couldn't even do anything in Oregon, nothing. You couldn't even own a machine to put in your basement. You couldn't do that. So we were like, you can't do that. So we checked it out, and there was a penal code for it.
4701B. B4 paragraph.
Yeah. So anyway, we got our lawyers to looking at it. See, and we were making pretty good money in the payphones, ATMs, and all that stuff that we put in convenience stores. We were making about $20,000 a month. But we were spending it all because we were building. You know, every time we'd make money, we'd buy more stuff. So anyway, we looked into that, and we got our lawyers to look into it. And they were like, yeah, this is your Billy Bob's is doing it. Dave and Buster's is doing it. All these big companies are doing it. Yeah, you can do it. And all these convenience stores are doing it. Yeah, it's fine. Do it. So that's what we did. And it started making a lot of money. And it just overtook. And at that point, the payphones had actually gone out because of cell phones. Yeah. So we had to revamp again, you know.
And Bill Olin told us that, you guys better start thinking about something else, because they just making these cell phone things, and it's going to take us out.
We're going to be done. You know.
Yeah.
The pay phones are going to be like not even going to know what they are.
So you diversify out of pay phones and into these games, and effectively same sort of target market. So it was convenience stores, you know, those sorts of locations.
Yeah, we started there. Yeah.
And you got confirmation working with your attorney that, you know, what you were doing was on the up and up. Very different regulatory environment than a place like Oregon.
It was the same penal code that Dave and Buster's, Chuck E. Cheese, Billy Bob's, or any of the like places where kids would go and play the games for their tickets, you know, and then mm-hmm. they go trade them in for junk.
Yeah. Billy Bob's had actual slot machines like Vegas.
Okay.
And people, and I don't know, we have a video on our YouTube channel that we went there as young men with our parents, and we were like, this was after we were busted, and we were like, how in the heck can they do that? And they were giving away, see, we were doing $5 items, nothing over $5, and they were giving away
$1,000. They had
$500 saddles.
They had a saddle sitting there, a nice leather saddle. Wow. And that was one of their gifts. They call them gifts.
So this was after the lawsuit and everything. But so we started, had our lawyers look into it, and they're like, yeah. And he even our lawyer gave an approval, and they put it on the wall. And now, a lot of people around us were paying cash. That was like a town, Rendon. Was that Rendon?
No, we were in Rendon.
No, we were.
Anyway, it was a little.
Canada. We were in Canada, and that was Rendon.
That's right. That's true.
And sorry. There was a town like 20 miles from where we had our business set up when we went into our own game room. And it was like Vegas. I mean, it was like Reno, and people would go on the weekends, and that you couldn't even get into town because all these little game rooms were set up and just paying cash. Here. And it was just like, I couldn't believe it, you know? And here we were.
Very rough area.
Yeah.
Very rough.
Well, it was, yeah.
You could walk around and see needles and things all over the ground. And, yeah. You know, it was like.
But they were making a ton of money, them people. So when we started our game room with just the novelty items, we had a grocery, we had a store, and we had people going, and it was really slow at first. But I went out to Rendon, and I went, okay, they're so busy, and we're over here dead, you know. And I went, well, there's a good-looking young lady, and she's a wait attendant, and everybody loved her, you know. And it was like she was just everybody was tipping her, and everybody's doing all this stuff. And I went, "You need to work for me." And she goes, "I'll never work anywhere else. I'm making a fun of here. I'm making so much money."
Now she did. Like, she did talk like that.
I'm making so much money, but she was really cute. And I went, "I'll pay you. What are you getting paid?" And I said, "I'll pay you more." And so she was like, "Never, nope. And so then I started getting other.
It's too bad she started working for us, actually.
Anyway, she got
Tana.
Yeah. Anyway, so I got other waitresses out there or attendants out there to work for me. And then she was like, "They're making so much money in it." And it, more and more people, the more people I got from there that were working out there to work for me, the more people came to be around those people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It opened up the door for us. And so finally, Tana, I said, "Tana, I'll make you a manager." Because she was the most popular of all the attendants, you know. And so she finally did it. And then, man, everything was really started cooking. And we were so busy. And we had people would stand in line. I couldn't believe they were doing it, actually. They would stand in line with 30, 40 deep to come in and get their little gifts that we had, you know, or exchange what they had won for our tickets that we had made out. We made these tickets. So anyway, it got really busy, very busy. The most we made in one day, and this is hard to believe, was 50 grand. Wow. 50,000 in one day, but we averaged about 12 to 15, I don't remember exactly, thousand a day. And Plus, we still had our ATMs and stuff.
We would have to shut down the game room a couple hours a day. We were open up 24 hours a day, except for 2 hours. So 22 hours a day. And we would collect money.
Sunday, we were closed.
And I'd go around. My job pretty much was to keep the machines running. So I did all the programming. I collected the money. And we were putting it on the machines. And
we had three money
counters. I don't know. You see you go to Vegas or something and you see how the slot machines, the sit down ones that they look like, and they got the slanted glass. And I put the money up on that glass and it would go all the way to the top. And it was just full of money. And it was a problem. And $100 bills, and 20s, mostly 20s, some fives, some ones. But it was amazing,
Mike,
how much money that we were.
Mike would run around in that game room, and he would give people money. He would say, here, play. Here. We're Christians, for one thing. And it was like, I would tell people, you need to not do this, you need to not. No, this is my entertainment. I love it. The more I win, the more I'll put in. That's all they want.
There was this one lady, and she was beautiful. Oh my God, she was a beautiful woman. And her husband, she would be playing this one machine, and I said, "Please don't play that machine. Never win." It was a $5 machine, and she was just playing boom, 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 and. Never would hit. And I was saying that machine, something wrong with it. And her husband was a car dealer. He owned a car dealership in a little town. And she had cancer. And he said, I will let her do whatever she wants.
And he just watched her.
And she never won. Never did. And
somebody did win on that machine later, but
I don't know. Anyway, so that was some of the people that was there. We just fell in love with them. And
Mike would, he started doing a singing. He did karaoke, and Mike would put on a cowboy hat. And he had quite a following. And just like Mike on everything we've ever done when he played sports or whatever, if he excelled, and like he was going to make, they wanted to play in the Kansas City Royals. They wanted to, when we were kids, when we were younger. And they said, come to play at the Kansas City Royals. We'll train you. We'll pay you.
Well, they came to Klamath.
Side story.
They came to Klamath Falls, Oregon. That's where we grew up. And they had an open tryout. So I went there. And I got an 8 out of a 10 score, running, hitting, fielding. Everything, and I got 8 out of a 10 possible score, and they told me, "Well, we can't take you because you're still in high school," here, contact us, and we'll set you up in camp and put you in the minor leagues, and pay you, I think, $1,500 a week or something, I really was kind of offended. I think I was offended. Because I wanted to go right to, the pros. I didn't want to go into no minor league thing. I'm better than that. Anyway, so I didn't do it, and it's very regretful. That's one of the biggest regrets I have is that I didn't do that.
But that was his everything. Everything we did, it was like if someone put him up there, he was like, nope, ain't good enough. So anyway, we were making all that money and everything, and doing the making all that money, and I was like, because they were busting some of the people that were paying cash out. Mm-hmm. Then started busting people out in Rendon, a few of them, not very many.
You guys were paying gift cards, is that?
We were given we were given gift cards. Then they could take them to the mall and get the gift cards, but we also got away from that and we started our own gift cards. And they could get, let me finish and then I'll get there. I think I'll get there where you're going. So we had our own little store, and we were getting, people would come in with their winnings, and I'm telling you, there'd be 30, 40 people standing in line to go into our office, to our little girl that was running the office. And I want that on the shelf, but a lot of people didn't want what we had on the shelf. And they'd say, I'd like to get a box of Cheerios, let's say. And so we had hired our own attendants to go get, we'd get a list, and then they'd go get to the store and get these items these people wanted. And then they'd come in and exchange these little cards that we gave them, $5 cards, and they'd get their gift. Or the person would go come back in and say, I decided not to get that. This happened a lot. And I'll just take this little card I got, and will you put money in my machine, and I'll play some more.
You know? See, then that was giving cash. You couldn't do that.
Well, they
couldn't give people money to play the machine.
You had to put it in yourself.
So we were following all these rules. You know, you can't. I can't do that, or because that's not any cash.
You'd put the credits on the machine, is what you'd do.
Okay.
So anyway, at one point I went, you know, this, can we shortcut this of us going out and getting what they want? Can we shortcut this somehow? And I was like, why don't we somehow hire these people that win to go get their own stuff and then come back and we'll, like we were doing with our employees, they would go buy the stuff with their money, and then they'd bring the receipt back, and we'd give our employees the money they bought all this stuff with. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we'd give them the money. So I said, why don't we just hire the players?
As an independent contractor.
Well, that's what it ended up being. Hire the players to go get their stuff, and then we'll reimburse them like we do our employees. And so we brought that up to a friend of ours who was very smart, and he said, what you need to do is an independent contractor's agreement and hire these people through an independent contractor's agreement. That way they're independent and they take care of their own taxes. They do whatever, you know. And so we're like, that's a good idea. Well, let's go to our lawyers. So our lawyers dropped this contract with the help of our friend, who was actually Greg Abbott, the Texas guy.
Yeah. He was attorney general.
He was attorney general then. And he said, and they made this contract that we had with our. Now, Greg Abbott didn't know that we were using that contract for that, but our buddy helped him make this contract. So
because they were in the payphone business and they had the independent contractor agreement for the payphone people who would go out and find locations. So that's where all of that came from.
So we got our lawyer to drop this contract and approve it. And I said, you know, we've been in this. There's so much. They're busting game rooms that are paying cash. And I don't want any trouble. I put at that point, 20 years into all this, more than that, but you know, and I don't want anything to happen here. And I told Mike, I said, I'm not going to go any further in this if we can't get approval from the sources. And I said, so we told our lawyer, get a hold of this DA, get a hold of the sheriff, get a hold of whoever, you know, that makes these decisions, and we can get approval on this contract. So we started doing that, and we got a meeting with the DA, and we got a meeting with Vandegrift, and we tried to get a meeting with
who was a senator at one point.
Yeah, and we tried to get a hold of the sheriff that was busting people out in Rendon, you know, and so we tried to get a hold of him, but he never would return our calls. And so when we went to see the county commissioner, and we recorded these phone calls, I mean, not phone calls, but these meetings with these officials. And so when we were sitting down with Vandegrift, he was like, we were asking for it in writing with our lawyer. And we were asking for in writing an approval of what we were doing. And they would all, every one of the people that we met with would say, looks good to me, you know. They know more than we did because they were Billy Bob's and all that were running, you know, on worse than we ever thought about. We were trying to comply. And so so we sat down with Vandegrift and had the tape recorder on the table. And he goes, man, this looks good, guys. He says, I love this kind of stuff. He said, I'm all for it. He says, I love it. Yeah, it looks fine to me. And then our lawyer says, well, we're trying to get a hold of D. Anderson, but he won't sit down with us, you know, or hasn't sat down with us. And he goes, well, I can't control that. He said, but I'm not going to put anything in writing. He says, but you do need to go to the sheriff. I mean, that's going to be the one who enforces all this stuff, you know. Now, keep in mind, we've met with the DA and we met with Vandegrift and the county commissioner. So we leave that meeting and we go downstairs. This is in Fort Worth.
I want to say something first. The comptroller had us buy comptroller licensings, and they were little stickers that you put on every one of the machines. So they knew how many machines we had, where we had them, and we
what paid, they were making.
We paid a lot of money to get these stickers. So we were above board on, you know, a lot of these game rooms, they didn't have stickers on. They
wouldn't let everybody in. They would you had to show you were a member, and they wouldn't let people in. No, we didn't do any of that. Anybody can come in.
Do you ever go to a drive-in movie theater?
Yeah.
Okay. So you remember when the movie was over and everybody line up behind each other in the cars and go out the little exit, and it was just takes a long time to get out there. Well, we had a big picture window in our above the
offices.
Yeah, we had apartments and whatnot, and we would just sit up there and watch these cars come into our place. Like, it looked like a movie theater getting out. That's what it looked like coming into our place.
This was after we had the approvals.
And we had 2,000 members, 2,000 independent contractors, and that's after what we've been going through there. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
So when we left Vandegrift's office and went downstairs, after the Vandegrift said, you need to meet with the sheriff, we go out, get out of the elevator, walk into the lobby, and we're standing there talking with our lawyer in the lobby, and he goes, I didn't even know who this guy was. You know, I've never seen the sheriff. If I've said D. Anderson, you block that out. And so there he was, standing over by the elevator.
Keep it.
You said standing over there by the elevator. And so I said, and our lawyer goes, there he is right there. And I said, well, let's go talk to him. You know, what are we doing? So we all went over there, and the lawyer was like, we've been trying to get a hold of you. And we, you know, told him who we were and what we were doing and how we wanted to, if we could not do this. And we had several phone calls into his office, and Mike was, we got all this stuff recorded. And if we can't do it right, we've been in business too long, we don't want any problems, we'll just shut the doors. You know, if we can't do it, we can't do it. But we want to get your approvals so we can carry on. And so we go over there. And
I remember a phone call I made to his office. And I said, if I'm doing anything wrong, we'll just stop.
We'll shut the doors. And, you know,
we don't want any trouble.
Yeah. We just want a meeting with you. So we see him after that at the lobby. And he says, I don't know you've been trying to call. Or I don't know anybody's, you know. And he says, yeah, I'll sit down with you guys. Sure, of course. Yeah, of course. I'll sit down with you. Yeah, just get a hold of my office and set up a meeting. Yeah, done deal. Oh, okay, yeah, cool, yay, you know. And so we leave, and then our lawyer keeps trying to call. He said, I've called so many times, and we were calling and calling and calling and calling and calling and heard nothing, right? So we're operating. and we're making all this money and everybody's coming to our place. And we've got the people going out and getting their own gift or their own gifts. They buy people, contractors would buy bags of concrete and, you know, tools and all kinds of stuff. And they bring us a receipt.
Down to gasoline. They'd go buy gasoline because gas was $1 a gallon or something like that. And
so they'd get, and then we'd reimburse them for, like we did our employees when they'd go get, you know.
We wouldn't let them buy alcohol or cigarettes.
Yeah, I couldn't buy nothing like that. So, and this was all approved by Vandegrift. And then we were trying to get D. Anderson, and the DA had seen it. But anyway, so that goes on for a while. And so I'm out on a date and, I'm out to dinner and having sushi or whatever in Dallas. And Mike calls me. He says, Steve, the sheriff's department was just here. I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah. And they just wanted to see how we're operating. I said, oh, good. I said, so he says, yeah, I gave him all the contracts. I gave him, you know, how we were doing it and everything they wanted. I gave it to him. And, you could tell that. Go ahead. I shouldn't be telling.
Well, that's fine. You know the story. They came in. They went. And I gave them a tour. I gave them all my independent contractor agreement. Took them into the office. Showed them the 2,000 members. And
nobody touches the cash.
And how we did everything. Everything he just went through. Going to get their own stuff, blah, 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 showing them and they said, the only thing that we see here you need to display some items. Well, we'd already done that and took it away because nobody liked it. So we put it back up. And they said, we were having buffets, okay? We were giving food to the people around the neighborhood. I didn't care who came in. They were just filling their plates full of chicken and, you know, all this. It looked like going into Luby's or something, you know, just a, you know, big spread. We were making so much money, you know, that.
You see people.
I felt guilty about how much money we were making. And so I was giving it back. I was giving it back to the neighborhood.
You see people coming in. And they were like, you knew they had kids, and they'd be just filling up, and they'd go out of there, and we'd give them sacks and stuff, and go, yeah, it's fine, you know. And they're like, you're feeding my family, you know, and that's okay, go, you know.
So anyway, they said, you can't do that. You can't give that away. You can't give Cokes away. You can't give coffee away. You can't do any of that. It's enticement.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we won't do that. So I started charging 10 cents for Cokes, 10 cents for coffee, you know, 10 cents for the food. And we got more people coming in. And it was just like, we can't stop these people from coming here. And they love this. And I don't understand why they did that, but anyway.
So you made some of these changes after at the request of the sheriff's office, effectively.
Yeah. So they said, do these things, and you guys can operate.
So Mike tells me this: what just happened? I'm on dinner, and I said, "Man, that's fantastic." I said, "We're done. This is it. You know, this is the okay. You know," and they told you that. If anything was wrong, the sheriff would get a hold of us, you know? And so we're like, yeah, fantastic. So we put it up on the wall that we've been approved, you know, and everything looks good at this point. And our lawyer wrote it up, you know, and everything. And so and we really started, and that got around, you know, that, and it even got busier. And that's when we made about 50 grand in a day, you know? And it was like crazy. So one day I'm there in the shop and doing whatever I was doing in the office. And one of our attendants comes up to me or calls me up and says, Steve, someone wants to talk to you out in the lobby. And I said, okay. I said, who is it? I don't know. I don't know who it is, you know.
Hey, I'll be right back. I got to go to the restroom.
No, oh, good. Go on.
You want me to wait?
No, you're good. Okay. You're good. Yeah, you can continue the story.
So I go down, she tells me that someone wants to see me in the lobby. So I go down, and this guy is standing in the out by the front door. And he introduces himself, and he says, I am representing the sheriff. And I said, okay. He says, looks like you guys need some protection around here. I said, what do you mean protection? He says, well, it's an evil world, you know, and people could rob you or whatever. And I said, well, I got people, you know. And he goes, well, he says, the sheriff wants to see if you'll donate to his campaign. I said, donate to his campaign. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, he says, actually, he says, a monthly thing. And he said, 10%, and he's looking around, he goes, 10% would be a fair protective figure. And I went, what are you talking about? Bribing? What? I said, that sounds like a bribe to me. I said, get the hell out of here. I said, there's the door that you came in, turn around and head out. Because what went through my mind is, I mean, like a flash, you know, people are evil, you know, and I just thought I'd be wrapped up in that, which I'm probably, this is probably what they do, you know, to let people operate and let like Billy Bob's and them, you know, that they're giving to the sheriff,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So we don't go in and stop them doing, giving away $2,500 saddles and stuff, you know. And we're giving $5 items. So I told him to get out. You know, I said, they'll just get out. And he's like, okay. And he just turned around and walked away. And that was confusing to me at the time. But now looking back, not so confusing. You want to wait till Mike gets here? Because this is when it gets.
Yeah, no, we'll give him
pretty a hairy. Huh?
We can give him a minute.
Yeah, he's going to the restroom. He's old.
Yeah. This is where the story gets crazy.
Yeah. I think it's important though to show how we changed and had to adapt. And this is business. People have to adapt. Like even what's going on now with all this AI stuff, you know, all this stuff is going to be to the wayside that people are been doing forever, and robots and everything will be taking care of all this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a really an adapted, and it'll change. People will have to do different things to keep making their money, right? Or they're sitting off like we are, where we went broke, you know? So anyway.
So he left. You've begun to learn how the world really works.
Yeah.
Okay. And then.
Which I already knew that. By how things changed all the time, you had to keep adapting. So he leaves, and I'm not really thinking much about that. You know, like, I think I dodged a bullet by telling him to get lost.
Well,
We
thought that if we would take that offer, that would be a bribe. And that we could be charged with a felony.
Yeah. So I actually told him, I said, the worst that can happen now, it's a class 3 misdemeanor, you know, the operating a game room and, you know, whatever it would just be a class 3 misdemeanor, right? Isn't that what it was?
Class A.
Class A, class whatever yeah, it was.
But paying a bribe is a much more serious.
Yeah, well, that's prison time.
That would be, I'd be wrapped up in it, you know, and I said, get out, you know. So anyway, we were operating along, and I don't know how long after that meeting with that guy.
Seemed like a couple of weeks. A
couple of weeks or something. They came in full force, SWAT team type crap.
Drug dogs.
Drug dogs. took all the machines, arrested some people. Did they arrest anybody?
They
that time
they had them go down to the police station or the sheriff's department.
But how many?
And they didn't charge them though. They let them go.
See, I was the vendor for this company. Mike was the owner of the business. I was had the machines. So I was on a different level than Mike. And so Mike was the evil guy, you know. That's how they looked at Mike was the operator. And so they were, and if you happen to look this stuff up, Mike's in the paper and he's telling how when they came in and they were like 30 officers, and I'm pretty much running free around the place. Mike's being contained. And
Channel 5 News was there, by the way.
Channel 5 News. There was like all the news were there. There was helicopters in the air, and there was news out in the parking lot, the vans and stuff. And so I'm pretty free to run around. And so I go out. In the out in the front where the vans are at, and there's a news van out there, and I walk out there, and the sheriff is sitting in the news van watching the videos.
And they said that, you know, they said that they never contacted the Channel 5 News. How I don't know, you tell me, how in the hell can the whole group of people be there at the time? What timing does Channel 5 News have?
Well, and they were
amazing, amazing.
It was everywhere. That was, you should have seen it. It was like all these reporters. They're in there questioning Mike. Why did you do that?
They did. They said
I'm watching it.
The sheriff's department said they didn't want the Channel 5 cameras inside, and I said no, bring them in.
No, that was me. I said.
Oh, he did.
I said if you don't, the sheriff actually said. As the news reporters were coming in to the office, and I'm standing there in the hallway, and the sheriff goes, no, I don't want anybody in here. You got to wait outside. And I went, you don't want them in here? And he goes, no, I don't want them in here. And I said, if you don't want them in here, I want them in here. I said, get in there. And so they go in there questioning Mike. So the sheriff leaves, goes out, and they're in there giving people tickets, and all these people that were playing and everything are giving them tickets and all this stuff. And so the sheriff goes out, and so I follow the sheriff. And he goes and gets in the van. And so I go, and I'm standing outside the van. The doors are open, and in there are a bunch of TV screens and everything, you know, and they're in there interviewing Mike. All these reporters are interviewing Mike, and Mike says, this is against my constitutional rights. I went to the sheriff. I did this. I did that. And he said, this is like Germany. He says, this is
nothing more than a communist.
He said, this is a socialist society leading towards a communistic society. And D. Anderson's there with his headphones on and everything. And he goes, he said, communistic. He said, that's not a word. That's not a word.
I think it is.
Yeah, I think it is.
I think it is.
And I said,
it's my word.
And I went,
if it's not a word.
He's sitting in there, big fat butt. And he's sitting in there. And I'm standing at the door. And he's laughing at Mike, my brother, on the news. And I said, whether that's a word or not, I said, you understand what he's talking about. And he goes, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
So they take all our machines. They take all the money.
They took our livelihood.
Yeah.
With no proof of doing wrongdoing. And that right there, and you asked before what we think that is a something that should be changed.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be able to go into a place of business without knowing exactly or going through a court and having You shouldn't be able to take people's livelihood from them.
That's how you fight.
Way to make money, without something that
very compelling evidence. Very, very compelling evidence that there's wrongdoing.
Well, even if it's compelling evidence, you should have a magistrate of some sort of.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It shouldn't be dictatorial powers where someone can just
we agree that you're doing something wrong. Now, we're not going to just kill you. Stop doing it, or else then we'll send in the powers that be.
And remember,
That's the puzzling thing to me is it would be very easy to put a temporarily shut down your operation.
Yeah, and say, we need
48 hours to conduct like a thorough investigation.
Yeah.
But instead, they disassembled your machines, right? Like they ripped everything out from under you.
They took everything, the money, everything they could get their hands on. They destroyed. We had our own ATM sitting in the lobby, and they destroyed it.
They took it all apart, cut wires.
They destroyed it. Why? You know why? Because they don't want you to take that somewhere else and make money, so you can fight them. So anyway.
Remember, I said we made a phone call, and I've got that recorded. Actually, if I'm doing anything wrong, we will stop.
Yeah.
And so they didn't even give me that opportunity and saying, hey, you guys stop.
Yeah.
So they take everything. They take the money. Now, I want you all to know that they took all of our – we had cameras everywhere. Security, and they took all that. They disassembled our security system and took it, but they didn't know we had two of them. One was hidden, and all the cameras were still running, and they didn't know that. And so we got it all on video, and how when they were bringing the money in and they're counting it, they're taking it away. The different deputies are taking it away. And so that's another story. But anyway, we got all this stuff on video if it was necessary. But anyway, so back to where D. Anderson was sitting in the van watching the videos, and I said to him what I said. And so we call our attorney, and he comes right down, and he's walking around, and he's witnessing all this stuff, right? And he's like, documenting everything they took and all that stuff and what was going on. And so we're like, well, Don McDaniels, what do we do? And he says, well, I'll go in tomorrow and I'll see what's going on. And I'll get a record of it and we'll have a way to fight all this. You know, we'll get our stuff back. And okay.
And he knows how many times we tried to contact
he's been part of all of this.
The officials, tried to make sure that everything and all the T's were crossed.
We had on the wall what Don McDaniels had written up on how we'd been approved by the powers that we had been to, and how we were, and then when the sheriff came out and said, you guys are operating correctly, and he put a big poster on the wall, and so everybody could see it. And so when they came in, they took that letter, and they said, I hope you're going to sue your attorney for this, because he gave you guys the false hope. You know, we're like, no. So anyway, the next day our attorney goes down to find out what's going on with all the what our next step is. And he calls us up and he says, there's no record of this raid that they did. We're like, what? He says, well, they just haven't probably got it documented yet or whatever. So
no jurisdiction.
Nothing. No record of this. And so I said, well, we need to, we got to go to court or something. And our attorney goes, yeah, I'll set up, you know. I don't know how long this took, maybe a month before we got our first hearing. So we go in there, me and Mike and our two attorneys. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Don Driver and Don McDaniels.
Yeah.
And we actually
had three attorneys.
Yeah. Yeah. Trimber. Anyway, so we go in there to the hearing. And they're going back and forth, and our attorney's reading these statutes that these guys are not getting their due process and all this stuff. And they took the stuff and blah, blah, blah. And the judge goes, stop. We don't have any precedents for this. There's no record of anything. So what am I listening to? And our attorney's like, well, Your Honor, they did this and they did that. And he's like, I can't hear this. Dismissed. And it was about that quick, wasn't it? Really quick. Three times we went in there doing this and can't hear it. No jurisdiction, no precedence, no nothing. So the last time that...
And they took $500,000 worth of machines. And, you know, so there's no jurisdiction, but you took our stuff and it hasn't even been reported. What's going on here?
So
how can you take all that stuff?
So we go in and
have no record of it.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
How can you do that? So we go in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was the third or fourth time. I think it was the third time. And same thing's going on. And our attorney goes, he's reading these case laws or whatever it is. And he goes, Your Honor. He says, you can't put these people's life on hold. This is the way they made money.
They kept saying it was an ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
So he says, how long can you do this, Your Honor? How long can the DA do this? And the judge is like, yeah, Mr. DA. And he did it like this, like I'm doing it. Yeah, Mr. DA. He says, how long can you do this? And he goes, well, Your Honor, he says, it's an ongoing investigation. He says, and our attorney goes, well, how long does this ongoing investigation take? And he goes, well, and the judge goes, yeah, Mr. DA, how long can you take?
You got a picture of this guy. He was tall, and he was from Germany.
And he goes, how long can you do it? How long does this take? How long can you take? And he goes, the DA goes, well, Your Honor, it was the assistant DA. He goes, well, Your Honor. And he's smiling. He says, a year, 2 years,
10 years,
5 years, 10 years. He says, we don't know. It's an ongoing investigation. And the judge goes, well, you got anything else? And our lawyer reads a few things, you know, And he goes, nah, I can't hear it. No case. Dismissed. So we go out in the hallway, and our attorneys are sitting on, there's a bench right out in front of the door, exit of the hallway. And our attorney goes, and they're like, oh. And they're hanging their heads, right? And the DA assistant and another guy, probably another assistant, they're standing just to the right of the door, and we're sitting like in front of the door. And they're looking back at us, pointing. I'm sorry to you, pointing at us and laughing. I jump up and I go, and I start pacing. And I go, man, I said, there's got to be something we can do. This is ridiculous. I said, is this America? I'm loud, if you can imagine. I said, this is America. I said, this is against our constitutional rights. This is against our due process. We got to be able to do something. And they're like, I said, we need to go federal with this. Not even know what I'm saying, right? We need to go federal with this. This is against our constitutional rights. This should not happen in America. And our attorney goes, he says, I can practice law federally. He says, I can do that. He says, let me look into it. So that's what we did. So we started a federal lawsuit. And so at that point, it was.
This is all costing a lot of money.
Yeah, it's costing
a lot of money. Anytime the new idea comes up, or you talk to your attorney, or they make a phone call, or they're doing all this stuff, it costs money every single time. It's not cheap.
We gave one $50,000 just to start, just $50,000 just to.
Yeah, just to get anywhere. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there are two more added in, you know.
So you go federal, and yeah. Why don't you walk through that process?
We went federal, and so they started the process, and the federal judge got the request. I guess they'd call. I don't know what they'd call it.
Judge means
federal judge in Texas, and so the letters started going back and forth. And the DA would send letters saying, well, you can't.
Ward White.
Yeah, Ward White. Not naming names, but Ward White.
Hey, that's we're not saying that they did anything wrong.
Yeah, I don't think you've slandered anyone in any way. Okay. I think you're just calling out what objective facts of the case.
All right. So anyway, so the judge accepted our case. And so then Ward White, the DA would write, I don't know what it's called, but they'd say, no, you can't hear it because of this. And then our attorney would go, no, you can't hear it because of this. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for months. And finally...
more than months, I think. Years.
Yeah, it was a long time. So anyway, finally the judge goes, that's it. Here's the date. These guys got a case. There's the date. This is the date.
They let me see the machines one time, and that was part of the. I want to see my machines. Where are they? Where are they? Where are they? And I said, I don't even think you have them. I think they're in somebody else's game room. I don't know. And so finally, I got to go up and see some machines, and not all of them, but I saw some that like the pots of gold and the ones that we paid $5,000 a piece for. And this guy took me up there, and it was in the old jailhouse, by the way, and it was kind of in Tarrant County, the jailhouse, and it was like, oh, my God, people used to be in this place, and it was horrible. I mean, anyway, they were all in there, and they were all lined up in front of these old jail cells, and this guy got on top of them and started leaping from one to the other, and I'm going, hey, you know, that's a $5,000 machine you're jumping on there, and I was going, oh, my God, and so... They were just, it was just a horrible, horrible.
So they go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And finally he says, we're going to hear, and here's the date. And we're like, yes, you know, I'm all dressed up, no place to go. I'm ready to go, you know? And so our attorney says, tells us, yeah, we're going, you know, this is the date. So be ready, you know, get your suits on and get, you know, I mean, it was really quick too, wasn't it? It was like just around the corner. And so I get we're celebrating or whatever we're doing. I don't know. But I get a phone call from our attorney, Don. And he goes, they want to meet with us. I said, who wants to meet with us? The DA wants to meet with us. He goes, so we're going to go up to the courthouse down in Fort Worth. And we're going to go, here's the time, we're going. So we did. And it was me, Mike, and our attorney, Don. And we walk in, go upstairs, they escort us up there. And we go into this, open the door, and we go into this room, and it's packed with sheriffs and...
Suits.
Yeah, the suits, the DA and the Ward White is talking to us. He brought us in the room and get in there. And I bet you there was easily 100 people in there, don't you think?
Oh, easily, yeah. There was,
yeah, they were along the walls, sitting around.
Must have been every officer and every whatever they had there. There must have been all of them.
So the desk is a big, long desk. Like what you'd see Trump sitting behind, you know? And so he's got D. Anderson is sitting three seats down from the front of the table. And Ward White had a chair for him at the end of the table and one for our attorney. Then it was Mike. Then it was me along the side. And then Dee Anderson sat next to me, the sheriff, and then all the way around, like 40 people around that desk. I mean, it was, I don't know how many, but
there was standing room only
along the walls.
The walls, it was a, just packed.
Yeah. So anyway, Ward White starts out and glad you guys are here. We want to do this meeting because we want this settled. We told this, I think he said dumb shit, but
he said stupid son of a bitch.
I heard stupid son of a bitch, but he said, we told this stupid son of a bitch or whatever, guy sitting next to me, to leave you guys alone. You were doing nothing wrong, and to leave you alone, and this dumb guy does this. And he says, and we want to give you your stuff back, all the money back. We want you to operate and go on your business like nothing happened. And our attorney goes,
and we had already lost $12 million by
I'm that sitting time. There watching, you know, and Dee Anderson's to my left, right? And I'm watching the DA saying all this stuff, and I'm like, woo, you know, wow, you know. And our attorney's sitting there, and he goes, I don't think Dee Anderson's going along with this.
Yeah, he's sitting
and there. And I look over there.
His face is turning red. He was beat red. He was out. Mad as hell.
And this is the guy that told me, he said, you need, I was handcuffed, and he said, and he leaves the room, and he comes running back in and leans over me, and I'm looking up at him, and he goes, you need to get out of my county. He says, you need to leave. He says, if you don't get out of my county, he says, I'll take you to jail. I'll take your brother to jail. I'll take your mother to jail. I'll take your father to jail. And I'll take your dogs and I'll destroy them. He says, do you understand? Your life is over as you know it. Get out of my county. And I'm like, he's spitting all over me. And I'm like,
this guy had big fat jaws.
I said, thank you, sir. And I was so mad, I'd like to get those handcuffs off.
I'm sitting in jail.
So anyway, the our attorney says, I don't think he's going to do that. He ain't going to give it back. And he's sitting there, no, no, no. Right?
Yeah.
And just slouching.
He was gripping his hands so tight that they were
rocking back and forth.
White. You know how you get blood circulation?
And
he was cut off from his fingers because he was gripping his fingers so tight.
And the DA goes, oh, he'll do what we tell him. He'll do it. And so they'd had a few more pleasantries. And he says, will you guys, the Ward White says, will you guys go over here and talk about what we've offered you? And he says, and then come back out. So we and he leads us over to this little side room. So we go over there, and our attorney's like, what do you think of that, guys? That's pretty good. Giving your money back, you can operate, and giving your machines back. Man, that's a win-win. Yeah. And I went, no.
I probably would have said, yeah.
I said, no. I said, that ain't good enough. I said, this should never happen in America. Never.
See, that's the point, too. It shouldn't happen in America. And so what do you do? What do you do? I mean, there was really no option at that time.
Well, see, I said, this should never happen in America. I want $13 million, and that ain't enough. I said, I want Dee Anderson to get on the public news, not on the paper, not in the, you know, not in some back alley. I said, I want him right on the news.
Channel 5 News.
Channel 5 News. And I want him to tell what he did to us and how it all went down. See, they told them that, they told the news that Mike jumped in his little SL55 Mercedes.
They ran over an officer. It was in a newspaper article.
Yeah.
This guy named Kennedy wrote the article, said, I got in my SL55 AMG 2001 Mercedes and ran over some cops and then, you know, left the area. I was in jail at that time. 2003. Anyway, I was in handcuffs and in jail when they said I ran over them.
That was a different
total. Talk about fake news.
Actually, that was
fake news.
Actually, that wasn't that time. That was something else they did to us without a warrant. Well,
everything runs in together, you know, yeah, especially when you're
trying to be as honest as you know.
The point being, what you guys were trying to accomplish was not just restitution for the damage that they'd caused you, but also, how do we make sure that this doesn't happen again?
Yeah.
Because
our pastor had told us of when you're dealing with so many different individuals in like these convenience stores we were dealing with, we had contracts with them with our ATMs and pay telephones and the air and water machines and the crane machines and all the stuff we'd put in their businesses. But they were always trying to get out of it because people would come in after we built it up. There would be other companies or they would themselves would say, why are we using them? We could be doing this ourselves, you know, and not paying them anything. But we had contracts. So we'd take them to, you know, they'd throw them in the dumpsters and they'd do all kinds of things. So we'd sue a lot of people. And we were like, we had a problem with that. Because it says in the end times that people will be suing everybody, but suing everybody in the Bible, you know. But our pastor said, look, you guys, he said, you guys are like Elijah and Elijah. He says, you guys are strong Christian men. He said, so you need to do this stuff for people who can't. He says, you need to stand up for people who can't stand up that are just victims. And so that's what was going through my mind, I guess, when I said, no, I want all that, you know, publicly known, and this should never happen again. So, and we told Ward White that, he was like, oh my. He says, we don't have any money like that. He says, you guys go talk, we'll go talk, and we'll get back together real quick. So we'll get to have another meeting real quick. So thank you for coming. I hope everything works out, blah, 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 you know. So we leave. And so I keep calling my attorney. Did you hear anything? No, haven't heard anything. Are we going to have another meeting? I haven't heard anything. No, haven't heard anything. I mean, he answers my calls like, boom, 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 boom. You know, we'd give him a lot of money and got a lot at stake here. So I'm sitting there. I don't know how long it was. 2 weeks again, maybe? I don't know. Week, 2 weeks? I don't know. I really can't tell you. So I'm sitting in our movie theater room watching the news, the local news, and I'm eating dinner. Da da da, do dim dim da. We're going to have a court hearing. We got a king coming. You know, and I hear on the news, Don Driver, attorney at law, Tarrant County, Texas, has just agreed to not practice the law.
Disbarred.
He wasn't disbarred. He just agreed to. It said that he was, I might have it wrong, but what I heard was he was agreed to not practice law in the state of Texas ever again.
So you found out from the news that your attorney who'd been with you on this journey is no longer practicing law.
Doing the federal case. We had threes.
So they got to him.
So I hear this. And I'm like, did I hear that right? What? So, ring, 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 ring. This is Don Driver, doing blah, 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 blah. No answer. So we jump in our little car and we run down to his office. And there's a U-Haul sitting out in front of his office. And people are loading stuff in it. We're like, walk in there, and he's sitting behind the desk. And I went, Don, what the heck? He goes, Stave, they got me. I said, what's that mean? He says, well, it wasn't anything that I did.
Yeah, right.
It was my employees. There was cash that people won lawsuits in escrow, and they took that money. But I'm getting blamed for it because this is my office.
How could they take the money?
This is how I remember it went down. I don't know. Might have a few things wrong. I don't know. A lot going through your mind at that point. And I said, well, I said, and I'm standing there. And he's sitting down. I said, well, Don, I said,
where does that leave us?
And he jumps up, and he's taller than me. Big Texan guy. And he stands over me and he goes, Steve, you gave me power of attorney and I dropped your federal case.
We won. We had won it at that time.
And I went, I don't even remember what I can't recall what happened after that.
I would have flipped out. I can't even imagine.
You go in shock.
I said, you go in shock.
Yeah. You know,
I don't have money to do all this again. I'm thinking starting a federal case Oregon. Blah. I mean, I think probably if I was smarter, I probably would have known what to do. But at that point, I'm like, we're done. This is going nowhere. Now, you got to remember, when we started this, before we got Don Driver and them guys to do all this stuff, we had a friend, Joseph Libby, and his dad was, under Reagan, was the head of the Navy, Libby. And this guy was an attorney down in Houston, and he was a friend of ours.
Sugarland.
And we went down there before we hired anybody else, and we told him about what had happened to us. And he said, guys, and he's a little short guy. He says, guys,
smart,
we're at his house.
Smart as hell, this guy.
He's smart, just in a smart aleck, and he bites you in a minute, I'm telling you. And so we're at his house. We went to his house down in Houston. And he goes, guys, he says, go do something else. He says, you got money left, right? Yeah. He says, go do something else. Leave this behind. Do something else. We're like, oh, Joe, you know, blah, 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 blah. This is what happened. Blah, 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 and this is what happened. And he goes, I understand. And he goes, and he's standing there. And he's reaching as far as he can to the floor. And we're going, what the hell is he doing? He's going, I said, what are you doing, Joe? He goes, his bottom hand, he goes, this is you. This is you. He says, this is them. This is them. He says, you will not win. He says, if they think you're going to win, they will kill you. You'll be dead.
I was running for sheriff at one point.
He says, you'll be dead. He said, and if you do win, he says, they'll change the law. So no one can do that to him again.
So I guess they did that, really.
Oh, of course
they did. They got Don, and they made him not practice the law and drop our case. So they got to him, and because they were going to put him in jail if he didn't do it.
So after that, I'm telling you, after that, and there was all these game rooms running, and we went and bought more machines after months, probably years. What are we going to do?
So we were going
to. And all these game rooms are running pink.
So we were going to sell machines.
Yeah, we were going to sell machines.
So I had 300.
And we were started vending machines to other game rooms and other stores. And we were doing all that. And so one time, you can cut this out if you want. One time we were going to, one of our mechanics, not mechanics, but technicians that, all these machines we were buying, and he was working on them and with Mike, and they were fixing them up, and we were either selling them or we were putting them in other game rooms or convenience stores or whatever.
Trying to make money.
And it was you know, it was going to grow. You know, we were still trying.
It wasn't near the money we were making before, though.
But we were trying to grow. But it was so much. Anyway, so let's see, where was I going? So we were buying machines and stuff, and our technician says, hey, there was an auction down in, I don't know where it was, in the middle of Texas, towards Louisiana. And he said they had an auction, and the people that won the auction didn't come up with the money. So these machines are up for grabs, and it's going to be $50,000 or $60,000. I forget what the exact.
Yeah, I think it was 50.
50 or 60. And they said they wanted cash for this. And so you guys want to put your bid in. We'll go down there. We'll look at the machines. They've got them at the sheriff's department.
So they had a money bag with 60 grand in it.
And holding in a big building. So we drove down there, Mike and his little SL55 Mercedes.
I had the money behind the seat. So we didn't take it in with us for sure.
So we go down there, and you may or may not want to show this. So we go down there to buy these machines, right? Cash. And so we get there, and the sheriff comes out with a deputy sheriff or something. She was a female. And
she was a female.
So we go in this room, and they lock the door behind us. And all these machines, I mean, machines.
That was a little strange.
These machines everywhere. But they had these machines roped off. And this was the machines that we could buy for 50 or 60, whatever it was. And I'm going, oh, my God, they locked the door. They've got guns. And is the sheriff.
He was acting kind of strange.
She was acting strange.
What's going on here?
I was watching her, and I was like, I want out of here. I want out of here. Oh, man. How am I going to get out of here? And so they said, well, here's what we want. And they were showing it. The sheriff was showing us the machines. And he says, and we want $50,000. And
he said he wanted.
He wanted 60?
He wanted more. He was.
Anyway, we had the money, as I remember it. We had the right amount of money, but I said, well, I didn't bring that much.
He kept whispering in your ear.
Well, wait, I'll get to that. I said, I didn't bring that much. I only brought 50,000, but we had what they said. And I think we had 60 in there. Anyway, so I said, I didn't bring enough. And deals off, you know, I'm wanting out of there. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. Deals off. I don't have the money. So, okay. So we'll go and we'll think about all this. And he says, I got to get that amount because that was what the auction was. And I'm like, well, I don't have it. So, you know, let us go. And he comes walking by me. He goes, okay, 50,000. Whispers it to me in my ear, walking by me. Okay, 50. I'm like, oh my God, I got to get out of here.
So, all these little side deals people go through.
I said, well, you know what? We're really hungry. We just drove all this way. I said, is there some place we can go get something to eat and then we'll come back? And he goes, yeah. There's a little restaurant right down here on the corner. Blah, 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 blah. And I go, okay. So, us and our technician, we go. The technician's in his own vehicle. And so we go to the restaurant, and I'm sitting there going, Dale, what'd you get us into?
Dale Whiteside.
I said, what'd you get us into? And he's like, well, Steve, that's what I'm gonna tell you. One thing.
He did talk like that.
And
goofy guy.
And then the phone rings, and we got our food, and the phone rings. And I said, put it on speaker. And he puts it on speaker. And it's the sheriff. And he goes, well, are you guys eating? And he goes, yeah, yeah. He says, you guys, you tell them that I'll take the 50. He says, and then when you get back to Dallas, he says, you tell them that you need to work on those machines and get that extra 10 and you send it to me. He goes, yeah, okay, I'll do that. Yeah, yeah, we'll get that done. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, we'll get that right done. I'll get right on that. Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, 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 yeah. And so he hangs up. I said, you son of a bitch. I said, Dale, I said, you bastard. I said, this is a setup. And Mike and I said, we're leaving and we're out of here. And so we jumped in his little SL55, and that's a pretty fast little car. And we didn't head back to Dallas. We headed off.
Yeah, we felt that they were going to block us, you know, block a road and pull us over.
Heavy traffic. And we were like, let's get the hell out of here, Mike. And so we're doing in the ditch. In the ditch. I'm driving out of there. And we went to Shreveport and we stayed for 3 or 4 days. And then we get back to Dallas. And a friend of ours we used to work out with, he calls me up and he says, Steve, I heard you bought some more machines. I said, where'd you hear that? And I said, no, I didn't. He says, well, that's what I heard. I said, where'd you
hear that? How would you hear that?
He says, where'd you hear that? He says, well, my buddy, he's a sheriff deputy out at Tarrant County. And he said, you guys bought some machines.
How would they know?
I said, no, I didn't buy any machines. And so the guy down the road from us,
Alex,
bought those machines. And he had a game room in his convenience store.
And he'd never been raided until he bought those machines.
And they busted him and took those machines.
Wow.
Now, you figure that one out. That's a big scam circle that they're pulling. It's...
Yeah, the corruption runs deep.
They would steal somebody's machines from there.
So this is what you're up against.
They would turn out and sell them to somebody else. Then they'd raid them and then do it over and over.
So if we would have
over again,
if we would have joined their little cabal and gave 10% of what we were making, would we have ever had any got busted, or we would have been on the good old boys?
It's remarkable, but you have to imagine that this is, and hey, by the way, we're at 90 minutes, so I think we should start rounding this out, but you have to imagine, though, that this is a scenario that probably isn't unique to your
story. No, it's right? Not unique.
Yeah, this is happening all over the place, and I think it's, what I think a lot of people forget when they think about government, and this isn't a trap I fall into any longer because I've become so at odds with almost anything authority, certainly government.
Me too.
Government is the incentives are so misaligned, and the opportunities for profit, whether that profit is power or money, and they have the guns, is. It's irresistible. And I think you end up in these situations, and most people forget that if you go to, like, you know, if you go to the DMV, you look at how incompetent it's, everything's slow, and, you know, the people are grumpy, and there's just, you know, 50 things that you come up with. That is the government at scale. Like, that's our federal government at scale, and at a smaller scale, but still at scale. That's your local government. That's your state government. And they're not, you know, they're not immune to the sorts of corruption, and certainly not able to fend off the broken incentives that they have. And so you end up in these sorts of situations. And it's sad, but I admire you guys for sharing the story, because I think it illustrates it very
well. You know, one of the reasons that we were introduced to Bitcoin a while back, and our friend said, hey, you guys should get Bitcoin. My sons are buying Bitcoin. They've had like 30 or 40 of them, and they were, I was going, you know, that crypto,
I didn't,
where
I didn't do nothing.
Where was this made? You know, how somebody's just making these things and you're buying them? That doesn't make any sense to me. Well, that years passed,
And then we were homeless for a couple of years, living in this bus here. I don't know if you can see that, but we were living in that bus.
Yeah.
And
2 years.
For 2.5 years.
With our mother.
She had dementia. Dad had pancreatic cancer. We left Texas and we lost everything. So, I mean, it was, we were
Dad 100% broke. Dad wanted us to leave Texas before he passed away.
Yeah. So we were 100% broke. And when we got, we started working at a mill and making $11 an hour, which was fine. You know, first job I got was working for Walmart, and I cried because we were going to make some money.
So, from riches to rags is what you got here.
So anyway, started working for the school district after Mom passed away. Dad and Mom passed away, and we started working. I was afraid to go to work around, be around kids because I thought, you know, I'd get sick and stuff. Anyway, the kids have been a godsend. And so then I don't know why did we get back into Bitcoin? Anyway, I bought some Bitcoin.
I don't know. Here's another. Man, you could just go forever with us. I know it's boring as hell, probably a lot of stuff. Just feel free to edit whatever you want. I will not be offended. When our friend told us Bitcoin several years back, David, the one who got the transfer or the kidney just a couple of days ago, when we started buying Bitcoin, we bought it at like 50,000, not very much.
100,000.
But yeah, 500, wasn't it?
No, 100.
Oh, well, anyway, so.
Then it started going.
That was like, there's a thing to really take note of here. I wouldn't have done it. And the reason being, I don't do computers. And a lot of the friends we talk to now that drive school bus, they're older too. They don't do this stuff. They don't know how to get on an exchange. I didn't know how to get on an exchange. I didn't know how to buy any stocks. Wouldn't do it in a million years. I wouldn't have done it. But I told Mike, Bitcoin's interesting. And then he did it. He did it. That was his side of everything. He's more
technical,
do that stuff. He just is, we'll do it, you know, whatever. He's amazing. So I wouldn't have done it. I told Mike to look into it, and he bought that $100 worth. And then later, I don't know, I think because of Trump being, saying he was going to make it part of the reserve, then we said, well, we better get in. We better do this. You know, we better do something. And so we started putting money in it. And we watched Michael Saylor, and he said he's buying Bitcoin, don't care where it's at. You know, he'll buy it high, he'll buy it low, he just buys it.
Well, it made sense to me when he said, at $100,000, you're at a 90%
discount.
You know, what do you call them?
Yeah.
Discount.
Yeah.
You're at a 90% discount at $100,000. He said, so, you know, there's only 21 million of these made, and it's going to get scarcer and scarcer and scarcer. And if you're not part of it, you're just going to be missing out. And so we've lost millions of dollars, and there was nothing you can do. We went to the bank one time, and we were putting money in the bank every day in the safety deposit box. And one day this guy come up and he says, well, the bank manager says, you know, we only insure $200,000. I said, well, you know, I was thinking, well, how in the heck do you know what's in that safety deposit box unless you go in there and look?
Yeah.
So they're not safe. So I started thinking, well, we're going to have to do something with that money. So we grabbed the money and threw it in built a false wall in our apartment. And it was that far away from the real wall.
And one of the times when I was sitting in jail, I was just praying, oh, God, don't, you know, because they had raided us. And I said, hope they don't find that money. It was about $1 million in there. And so that was our self-storage money.
That's why that makes so much sense to us.
Yeah. So when Bitcoin come along, and we're going to tie all this into why Bitcoin and why you should do Bitcoin and put your money in it. Don't be afraid to do this, because your money's, the fiat is going down all the time because they keep printing money. And there was this little girl on this tennis trip yesterday, and I was talking to her because I had been her bus driver for years. And I said, you know, you should get into Bitcoin. And she says, well, what is Bitcoin? And so I started telling her about it, you know, that's, hey, it's, you know, if you talk to your mom and dad, because, you know, you can't just tell the kids, you know, come see me, I'll tell you all about it. You know, I'll get your parents and we'll all get together if you need to do this. And they live in a little trailer park and they're not really that wealthy, or, you know, there's a lot of people that are really don't, that $100,000 to them is like, I can't buy $100,000 Bitcoin. Well, you can just buy parts of Bitcoin. You put $50, $100, $5. So I was telling her all this. And she said that her parents had been giving her money all along and she saved it. She had saved the money, all of it, didn't spend any of it. And she says, I got $2,000. I said, oh, wow, you got $2,000. That's pretty good. I said, you have it in the bank? And she says, no, it's in my drawer. I said, your drawer?
Wow.
I said, well, you know what? I admire the $2,000 from, you know, that's great. I said, if I was your dad, I'd tell you to put it in Bitcoin. But, you know, you talk to your dad. I said, but your money's going down all the time. It's not making you anything in a drawer. I said, even if you put it in the bank, it's really not making you anything either, because, you know, the government keeps printing out the money and the value of your money is going down all the time. You better do something with it. And so she's very interested. And so I told her, watch Michael Saylor, watch the Bitcoin Way, watch Simply Bitcoin, watch all these YouTube channels.
We bought our nieces and nephews some Bitcoin.
They weren't for it either until I did that.
I called Charlie, that's a 15-year-old little girl, and I said, Charlie, I said, you know about Bitcoin? Uncle Steve, that's a scam. That's a scam, Uncle Steve. Stay away from Bitcoin. I said, oh, yeah? I said, it's a scam? I said, what if I told you I bought you some Bitcoin, you and your brother and your other nieces and nieces and nephews? She says, well, I said, she says, well, did you? I said, yeah. I said, I'll send you a picture of it. It was $100. And she's like, oh, really? That's mine? I said, yeah, but you're not going to touch it. It's just, we're going to leave it there. Well, you know, it's gone up, son. And mm-hmm. We send them pictures and everything. And so I talked to our niece, our sister's daughter, and I said, we bought you guys some more Bitcoin today. I said, so show Charlie. And her mom says, Charlie and her little brother are running around teaching everybody about Bitcoin and how to get into Bitcoin. She says, they're really, really cute doing this. I said, well, show them this. And it's about $100 has turned into $109
at one point.
And they thought, and they said, that's so cool.
Yeah, you see it grow. And, you know, that's, and nobody can take it. This cold card, the node, the help that, Simply Bitcoin and you guys have done on the counseling part of how to do all this.
Just teaching them was,
you know,
that process, you know.
It was well worth it to us, and the help that we were getting to how to self-storage.
I'm going to tell you something else, and you can not put this. Everybody at the bus shop will not. One guy will do it. He bought some Bitcoin. But he'd been in the stock market before, and he's 72 or
yeah, 72.
And so he bought some Bitcoin, but he's having a hard time holding on to it. And he sold some. He says, it went down and I sold it. I said, don't sell it, Herb. Don't sell it. So he bought it back, but now, and now it's gone up. And now he's happy again. You know, he's not buying very much. But this one guy, he's a veteran and he's 52 years old. And I said, and this is the story we hear. I'll ask my wife. I think I've told you this.
I'll ask my wife.
And the wife comes back and says, no. And so this big, tough veteran, you know, my wife said no. I said, okay. I said, okay. And so I pull in the parking lot.
Herb will get down.
For Thursday.
Get down.
And he goes, he rolls down his window and he goes, my wife still says no. And I went, okay. I said, I didn't even bring it up to him, you know. I said, you're a veteran, right? And he goes, yeah. I said, well, I'm going to say something to you as of, because I appreciate you being a veteran and being in this service. I said, I think that's phenomenal. I said, so I'm going to tell you something. I said, I'll put $100 and buy you some Bitcoin, get you started. He goes, what? I said, yeah. I said, that's something I want to do. It's on my heart. He goes, Steve, he says, no, he says, you can't do that. I said, no, I'm not going to make you. I said, and I said, talk to your wife. I said, I don't want to cause any friction between you two or anything. I said, but I want to do this and I'll get you started. I said, and if you want to, you can match it. I said, but I'm not asking you to, man. I don't want my money back. It's yours. And he was like, he teared up a little bit. He goes, that's unbelievable, Steve. That's unbelievable. I said, yeah, well, no. I said, I don't think so. I said, this is something I want to do for you and your wife. I said, and the reason is I want to get you started.
Very cool. That's amazing.
I told Mike.
Yeah.
Mike, train him. Mike, train him.
You guys are, no, you guys are doing amazing work. It's, I think it's important to orange pill your friends and family. Guys, we're out of time, but this has been a fun conversation. Crazy story. I know you guys have, and I'll link to this in the description, but you've got a video where you sort of go into maybe even more detail than we went into today on the whole story. So very interesting, very sad. And so we'll make sure we include that. Is there anything else though that you, that we didn't touch, or any other place you want to send people, or how to get in touch with you if they're interested? Or not. You don't have to give people contact information or anything, but if you've
we
got
have a YouTube channel.
Yeah, your YouTube channel. What is that?
It's do it yourself with fixing it. Can you see that backwards?
Yeah, do it.
You see that? It's do it yourself with fixing it with the Long Bros.
Okay. So everyone needs to make sure they go check that.
Do it yourself with fixing it with the Long Bros.
Love it.
That backwards?
Yes, could be backwards.
No, it looks right on my end. You're good. You're good. All righty. Well,
I think the important thing to do for anybody that gets into Bitcoin, self-storage, because, well, if we wouldn't have had that in the wall, and they looked for it, trust me, they tore the house apart. They tore my bed apart. They took all of everything. I mean, the house. It was horrible.
It looked like a bomb hit inside there.
And they didn't find that behind the wall.
So self-custody. That is the beauty of Bitcoin.
Self-custody.
You can self-custody and you can accrue value instead of losing value in the money that you hold.
And it's well worth getting the help to do all of that.
Well, thank you. Hey, we're grateful to have you guys along for the ride.
Bitcoin way.
Thank you. Thank you guys so much. All righty. Hey, you guys have a great day. I look forward to catching up soon and maybe we'll get to chat again here.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you guys.
It's been a pleasure.
Edit it any way you want. I will not be offended. Trust me.
I appreciate it. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. I know I had a blast chatting with them. Love their stories and willingness to share. And again, shed light on the injustice that they experience and that many probably across the country are experiencing as well. Go check out their YouTube channel. Give Mike a follow. I think I'm going to link to that in the description. And of course, if you need help with what they talked about at the end there, proper Bitcoin self-custody, take control of the keys yourself. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast, schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team that can help you do it right. And if you need help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones, or a Plan B residency, we are a one-stop shop for all of your self-sovereignty needs. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Do me a favor, if you're enjoying the show, go give us a like, subscribe, share this with someone, leave us a comment, anything to feed the algorithm. We would really appreciate it. Spread the word for us. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.